Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm John Milford, Chair of the Club's Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Esther Koch. Esther Koch is a gerontologist and the founder of Encore Management, a Medicare and aging advisory services firm. She's an aging network partner with the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid and the Administration on Aging, and was a delegate to the White House Conference on Aging. Her professional business credentials also include Stanford MBA, PricewaterhouseCoopers CPA, and Chief Financial Officer. Esther speaks on a wide range of aging and retirement topics, including Medicare, elder care, and successful aging, and is a frequent speaker at the Commonwealth Club. Her media interviews and articles have appeared on television, radio, online, and in print. Please join me in welcoming Esther Koch.
So just like with your current policy, there's some co-insurance, co-pays or deductibles. So too does Medicare have that. So we got A, B, C's and D's of Medicare. Medicare comes in four parts. The good news tonight is we're not dealing with 26 parts. So we're only dealing with four parts. So part A. Oh, and I want to say Medicare started over 50 years ago in 1965. So some of the way it's been structured is a little different from what you have now. So I'm going to try to guide you through that, but keep that in mind. So part A is hospitalization. So HI, hospital insurance, this is what you pay your Medicare, your payroll deduction for Medicare. This goes into the hospital fund. It covers inpatient hospitalization. Usually when there's an inpatient hospitalization, there's a skilled nursing session stay afterwards. So it covers skilled nursing. It also covers hospice, not because hospice can only be given with you can only have it in a hospital. It's just that's the way it used to be in the hospital, but now you have other venues in which you can have hospice services, but the actual terms of it are part of Part A. So Part B is everything else. So that's the medical side. So that would include your doctors, your surgeons, but if the surgeon isn't an employee of the hospital where you have your hospitalization, that surgeon is part of Part B, not part of the hospital, not part of the Part A. It also includes outpatient surgery. So even though your outpatient surgery is in a hospital, you weren't inpatient, that was outpatient, that's part of Part B. It covers diagnostic tests, lab tests, and then durable medical equipment. So Part A and Part B was what originally Medicare was. It was just those two parts. Back 50 years ago, they used to call that fee-for-service. So when you hear them talking about fee-for-service, they're talking about original Medicare the way it was originally structured. And the other point that – hold that thought. So the next one is Part C. And Part C came into existence in the mid-1990s. So this is optional. Part C, they now call them Medicare Advantage plans. If you're getting promotional material, it's either a Medicare Advantage plan, a prescription drug plan, or a Medicare supplement. It won't be from Medicare. So these are optional alternative way to get your Medicare, so you get it in a managed care environment rather than this fee-for-service, which, again, you might think of a very large PPO plan that you can only go to a Medicare provider in today's terminology. So there's a health insurance intermediary, so you'll deal with a company. It goes from Medicare, there's a health insurance intermediary, and then there's you. But it's part of the Medicare system, but it's optional. Part D came into existence in 2006. This is for drugs, self-administered drugs. So that would be pills, but it would also be if you do injectables, self-administered injectables. Here, too, the government's outsourced the management of it. You have a health insurance intermediary. It's still part of the Medicare system, but there's a health insurance intermediary in between. And here the concept is creditable coverage that you are required to have, where in Part A and B, you are required to sign up for it. Here, what you're required for Part D is creditable coverage. Now, already you're probably noticing there's a lot just in my describing Part A, Part B, Part C, and Part D. So I also want you to know I can't make this stuff simple. Because it's not. My goal today is to make it more clear to you. So the goal is clarity. So in the interest of clarity, I like to think of Medicare as this equation. Part A plus Part B plus Part C plus Part D equals Medicare. So now if I take that Part C and put it on the other side of the equation, I now have a gap. So I have A plus B plus a gap. Plus D. Oh, and by the way, it's no longer equal. It's kind of approximately equal to C. So that's the way I think you want to think of what your alternatives are for Medicare. You really have two ways to get your Medicare. Either you get it where you can go to any Medicare provider in the United States, which is commonly referred to as fee-for-service. There you take Part A and Part B as original Medicare, the way it was originally set up. They now call that original Medicare. You're likely to get a Medigap policy, which is not part of Medicare. This is a private plan. And then you're likely to get a, you probably have to get a standalone Part D plan. So if you want to go to any Medicare provider in the United States, you want to take this fee-for-service original Medicare model. The alternative is to take this. It's like you exchange your Part A and B for Part C and D, and it's all combined in one plan, and most of those plans nowadays are HMO models. So this might be more what you are used to if you are in an HMO. It's a combined plan. So I'm going to walk through each of these alternatives. First, I'm going to go through the fee-for-service model, and then we'll talk about the managed care model. So the first thing to notice, though, is that whether you're, whichever model you choose, you have to sign up for Part A and Part B. So let me kind of describe Part A and Part B a little. You are to enroll in Medicare. There are late enrollment penalties if you don't enroll. If, however, you are working past 65, you're a current employee, and you're in a company plan, group health plan, you're given a special enrollment period, so you don't have to enroll. But just so you know, if you're in, if you have retiree insurance, that's not a current employee. If you have COBRA insurance, that is not a current employee. So you have to be a current employee to get this special election period. It is your responsibility to enroll. It's kind of like the IRS does not send you a letter to say, send in a tax return. It's the same thing. You're not going to get a letter from Medicare that says you need to enroll. The only time you wouldn't have to self-enroll is if you're already on Social Security. They already know your age. You've already validated it to them, so they'll just enroll you. And you actually enroll through Social Security, not through Medicare. So the initial enrollment period, you probably heard about this. This is this period, the 6 month, the 3 months before the month of your birthday and the 3 months after is this 7 month initial enrollment period that you have. So I don't want you to even think about months 4 through 7, because if you do, your effective date of Medicare will not be what could be your earliest effective date. So potentially you're going to have a lapse in coverage if you leave your company plan or your other plan. So you don't even want to be thinking about months 4 through 6. You want to be focusing on months, the 3 months prior to your birthday month. And then, oh, by the way, your birthday. Now, if there's anybody in the audience like me, my birthday's on the first of the month. Well, Social Security determines that those people that are born on the first of the month, you attain your age the day before. So I attained my age the end of the prior month. So if you're born on the first of the month, your Medicare effective date is the month before. So keep that in mind. If you are enrolling at age 65, you can enroll online at socialsecurity.gov/Medicare, or you can enroll by phone or in person. If you are waiting till after 65, it's difficult to, you can't do the complete registration online because there's documentation that you're going to have to get from your employer to prove that you were indeed on a group health plan, so that you can indeed qualify for that special enrollment period. And this is what your Medicare card looks like. And so here, another point, the two points that I want to make here is that your effective date will be the beginning of your whatever month is considered your birthday month. So even if your birthday is the 28th of the month, your effective date of Medicare will be the first of that month. And Medicare claim numbers, currently they are your Social Security number with an alpha identifier. In a couple years from now, that is going to be changed. So most people, how much is it going to cost? Most people get Part A for free. And if you qualify for Social Security, you qualify for Part A free. But Part D, Part B and Part D, well, actually also Part C, they have a premium to it. And the premium, and in addition, so for this year, for 2017, the premium for Part B is $134 per month. However, if you, there are high income premiums. So if you make modified adjusted gross income over $80,000 for an individual, $85,000 for an individual, $170,000 for a couple, you will be subject to high income premiums, and they will figure the for a particular calendar year, they look to your tax returns 2 years earlier. So for 2017, they're going to look at your 2015 tax return. And when the it'll be a combined number for your Part B premium, but your Part D premium is going to be a separate high income amount, because the actual premium on the plan is going to be separate. So it's a little different. So that's Part A and Part B. So now let's talk about a Medigap plan. So as I said, actually, I will start with saying that a Medigap plan is unlike any kind of insurance plan that you've ever come across. First of all, it's not part of Medicare, and it's formally known as Medicare Supplement Insurance, but I prefer, and many people call it, Medigap Insurance, because it really hones in on what it is. It's covering the gaps in what Medicare doesn't pay. So this is an important concept. It will cover what Medicare doesn't pay, not what Medicare doesn't cover. So the only way a Medigap plan comes into existence is based on what Medicare didn't pay on a claim. So you might actually think of it, it's really not health insurance, it's financial risk insurance. So it's not like they're deciding, oh, you can go to this doctor or not. No, there has to be a Medicare claim first. It only works with original Medicare. That's when you want it in this fee-for-service where you can go to any Medicare provider. It only works with original Medicare. And in essence, what it does, it limits your out-of-pocket, because 50 years ago, there was no concept of max out-of-pocket. That wasn't in existence. So this Medigap plan is something that will cover to limit your liability on what Medicare doesn't pay on a claim. So just to give you an idea what some of these gaps are in original Medicare for this year, for 2017, for Part A hospital, it's a $1,316 deductible, but that's per 60-day period. So if you were hospitalized the beginning of each quarter, you would have four deductibles for hospital insurance during the year. The other large amount is under Part B, is the 20% coinsurance. And where that can get steep is under Part B. That could be your outpatient surgery, that could be your surgeons in the hospital, that could be your diagnostic equipment. So that 20%, the higher, that's the other highest exposure that you would have. Now, there are standardized Medigap plans. So again, we have an alphabet here. We have A through N. A few alphabets have been retired, but they're standardized. So what they cover, if you got a Part A plan in California, it's the same as one in New York. There's a couple of states that don't. Generally, it's generally the same thing. But what varies is what the vendor is going to charge you as a premium, and the way they compute premium increases. So that's going to change, but the actual coverage, they are standardized. Now, you may have heard about a Plan F. A Plan F is not part of Medicare. It's A, B, C, and then all of a sudden F. It's a Plan F that's a Medigap plan. This one covers all of the gaps of what Medicare doesn't pay. So that, and it's just to give you an idea on how much that might cost. It's based on age plus zip code. But right now, if you're 65 in this area, it's probably between $125 and $150 a month. But what happens when it's like you're purchasing an insurance policy to cover your deductibles. So what that means is, other than, you know, your drugs and high-income premiums, you're not paying any other out-of-pocket. Instead, you're paying a premium each month, and then the Medigap plan is going to pay those claims. So you're it's like you've limited your exposure. It's a way that they got to max out-of-pocket before that terminology was ever utilized. So when and where do you purchase it? So there's an open enrollment period, which is when you cannot be denied coverage. So remember, this is private policy. So long ago, they figured out this point about allowing everybody to be covered, but you only get that at one point in time. And that one point in time, it starts when you're both 65 and you're enrolled in Part B. So even if you're working, you're still applicable to this and you don't sign up for Medicare, it's fine. You're turned 65, but you haven't signed up for Part B. So it'll get triggered once you sign up for Part B. And you would purchase this through an insurance company or through a broker. So that's what a Medigap plan is, covering what Medicare doesn't pay on a claim. So then the next one is a Part D drug plan. And, you know, Einstein would have said no problem with E equals MC squared, but don't ask me anything about the Medicare drug program. So this is another one that is unlike any other insurance that you've ever heard of, because right now you just get your drugs as part of your health plan. You don't even have to think about drugs separately. That's not how this one works. And also here, the requirement, you're not required to enroll like you are in A and B, but you're required to have creditable coverage. So they want you to have creditable drug coverage that could come from a retiree plan. So then you don't have to sign up for a plan. And oh, by the way, just to let you know, you better not sign up for a plan, because you can't be in two types of covered drug plans, because these retiree plans get reimbursement from the government. So you could potentially get kicked off of your retiree health plan, not just the drug portion. So you want to make sure that you don't sign up for it if you're in a retiree plan. It may come from your company group plan, and actually your employer is required to notify you on an annual basis as to whether the coverage in your drug plan is creditable. So that you may have noticed that, but maybe not, as you got something from your company. And usually that comes out in October. If you're working past age 65, you should maintain copies of those, because when you subsequently sign up for a drug plan, you would have to prove that you had creditable coverage. So if you don't have creditable coverage and you're not enrolled, then there are penalties for late enrollment. And in addition, you do not have the ability to enroll in a drug plan until the annual open enrollment period, which is once a year, at the end of the year for the following calendar year. So there's dollar penalties and enrollment timing penalties. So there's two types of drug plans. So one is called a prescription drug plan, standalone. There's 24 in the state of California. They're all different. These are not standardized plans. They're all different. And then there's also Medicare Advantage plans with drugs. Most of the models of Medicare Advantage plans have drugs as part of them. You are not buying that. You're not enrolling in that plan for the drugs. You're enrolling that plan for the health coverage. So it's like what you would do now. You just take whatever drug coverage comes with your plan. So how do you save money on prescription drugs? I'm going to tell you the secret coming up. You got to get to the drug plan finder, because you really need to compare drug plans on an annual basis, not just when you first enroll, but on an annual basis. And just to give you, so the other ways to save money on drugs, if you don't take drugs, that's great for you, but you really need to sign up for a drug plan, because if you don't, so get the cheapest premium plan, because if in the middle, let's say the beginning of January, you're diagnosed with cancer and you're giving very high self-administered cancer drugs, you cannot sign up for a drug plan until the following calendar year because you missed the open enrollment period. So you want to do it. It's a cheap contingency insurance. The other way is to have generic drugs and also mail order. But by far, the best way to save on drugs is to get to the drug plan finder. And here's why. All of these plans, they can vary by, they're supposed to meet a standard, but none of them are a standard. So they can vary by premium. They can vary by deductible. They can vary by what drug they put in what tier. They will vary by how those tiers are priced. They will vary by coinsurance, by copays. So there's all these different ways that they vary. Another one is that each plan has a drug formulary. So I like to think of that as like where you can get drugs kind of on sale or cheap. If it's on the formulary, it's usually going to be cheaper to you. So the key is to get more of your drugs on their formulary. So the more of that, you know, that sweet spot, that's going to be where you're going to find the cheapest overall cost of your drugs. And just let me give you an example of a client of mine. So over the last 4 years, I've saved him $20,000 on his drug plans. And each time this is maximized from the year before. It was optimized from the year before. So just for example, last year, the drug plan, if he had stayed on the plan that I had recommended to him for the prior year, which was the optimized, cheapest plan for him in the prior year, if he stayed on that plan this year, it would have been $11,000 more than the plan that I recommended. So these drug plans change annually, and they can really be significant because he only had three drugs. So there can be significant numbers in here. So but how do you figure out all these variables? So you don't. We have the drug plan finder. It's at www.medicare.gov. Find health and drug plans. You're going to you put in your zip code, you put in your drugs, and then it comes up with a list from cheapest plan to most expensive plan. At least that gets you in the ballpark. Because remember, these are your same set of drugs. Like, who would want to pay $11,000 more for the same set of three drugs in a year? So, but there's other things when you drill down, there's other things that might be of interest to you on their the star rating, and there's some other things if you drill down. But even just to get to that pricing difference is really incredible. And that the number is the total of the drugs plus the premium. So now you're comparing apples to apples, where before it's really tough to do that. So you're looking at total estimated annual cost combined. So how much do plans cost? Premiums range from under $18 to over $159. Just because you get a cheap premium plan does not mean you got a deal. And just because you went in the most expensive plan does not mean every drug you're ever going to be prescribed is going to be covered at the most cost-effective way. So you really have to get to this drug plan finder. Here, too, there is a high-income premium on the drug plan. The plan will charge you their premium, but then Medicare will charge you this high income premium on your bill that comes with your Medicare A and B bill. You would enroll through the insurance company, sometimes either online or by phone, or you can go through 1-800-MEDICARE or through Medicare.gov. So that was alternative number one. You're taking Medicare fee-for-service. You can go to any Medicare provider. You're probably going to get a Medigap plan, and you're probably going to have to be in a Part D drug plan. But now let's go to alternative number two, where you take all of this combined in a Medicare Advantage managed care environment. So this is optional. This is an optional choice for you. You're dealing with a health insurance intermediary. For a zip code in San Francisco, there currently are 8 options. They are all HMO plans, and they are all Medicare Advantage plans with drugs. And the costs to you are going to vary based on the plan. So when I talked about original Medicare and a Medigap, and I told you those deductions and coinsurance, now that you're in this managed care environment, you're getting the same coverage of Medicare conditions, but how much you're going to pay for it is going to vary by plan. So that's, you would have to look at to make sure you understand that. So Medicare Advantage plans have potentially the most all-encompassing coverage. Frequently, you might, well, can't say frequently, but they might include eyeglasses. They might include hearing aids. They might include some dental, because that's not part of that's not part of regular Medicare. They've added that. But what's going to happen is they are the most restrictive as to your provider network. So if you're the kind of person, one of my clients had prostate cancer, he went to MD Anderson. If you're in a Medicare Advantage plan and that's the way you feel, you're going to have to pay for that all out of pocket. So you have a specific regional network. You're going to usually have to have a primary care physician, and you would have to get, usually referrals are required to specialists. And outside the plan area, it's only emergency. So you can't get outside the plan area, and you really have to understand what the plan area. So for example, I live in Mendocino, California. The Medicare Advantage plan there, you can't even get to Santa Rosa. It's only Mendocino and Willits. So you really need to understand what this regional network is. So you have to, so it's important to understand the provider network. Now, the other thing is, and that provider network can change annually. Just as you know, provider networks change for you. So that provider network could change over time. So the one thing I want to emphasize with, you do have the right to change on an annual basis. Say I'm in a Medicare Advantage plan, you can change Medicare Advantage plans annually during open enrollment. You can get back to original Medicare, or you can switch. You can do that. But what you can't do is get back to a Medigap plan, because that Medigap plan is a private insurance. There's only one time there's going to be guaranteed insurance. And the likelihood is, if you're in a Medicare Advantage plan, probably the reason you're thinking, I want to go back to original Medicare, is because you're sick. So you're not going to get through underwriting. So that's why I think you want to understand what that potential limitation is. There are some ways you get a little look-see if you take it at age 65 and you change back within the first 12 months, but that doesn't apply if you check out a Medicare Advantage plan after age 65 because you worked a few years. So you can get back. I'm not saying you can't, but the likelihood is, you're going to have to move out of the area, sell your house, move out of the area. So I just want to bring that to your attention in your decision making. And the place where you can look, you can review these health plans. You can also do that at Medicare.gov. You just click health plans. Now, it's not going to tell you what the provider network is. You're going to have to do your research on the provider network yourself, but it will tell you what some of these deductibles and copays and max out of pocket. So you can get that information. And again, that would be initial and annual, because again, these are outsourced plans that are changed annually. You know, they're competitive now. So how are they doing against their competition? So there's competition out there. They're going to change annually. So now let's go to, okay, what might this cost for you? If you're doing this fee-for-service, any Medicare provider, I'm assuming Part A is going to be free for you. Part B, that's the $134. Let's assume a Medigap plan is $150. Let's assume a drug plan is $36. Those last two numbers may vary, but so that comes out to about $320 a month. No additional out-of-pocket, except for both of these alternatives. If you have high-income premiums and the cost of drugs, that's separate for both of these alternatives. If you chose managed care, excuse me, similarly, Part A free, Part B $134, Part C in this zip, in a San Francisco zip code, they range from $0 to $127. Part D usually doesn't have a fee, a premium associated with it. It's usually in the health, although I will tell you there's a plan in this area that only has a drug premium, not a health premium. So, but ballparking here, we're talking about $134 to $261 a month. But here, you are going to have additional out-of-pocket. And the way the plans in this area are structured, they have a max out-of-pocket between $4,400 to $6,700. So that gives you a sense of comparisons, what's covered and what's not covered. So now let's talk about retiree insurance and employee insurance. So if you have retiree insurance, you have to sign up for Medicare A and B. Although people say when they have retiree insurance, I have X, really they have Medicare. So because no company is going to assume the liability that the government has already decided that they has decided to take on. So you have to sign up for Medicare A and B. You need to review the retiree information. There might be some enrollment information. One of my clients, he couldn't enroll in the retiree plan until he had a copy of his Medicare card. So if you wait for the month before your birthday month, you're probably not going to have that Medicare card. So he wasn't able to get on the retiree plan where there was a lapse in coverage. So you've got to read. Unfortunately, you have to read some things. Sorry. And they usually have multiple options, so you understand your options. Now, here's the good thing if you're in a retiree plan. They have a whole retiree department for you. And they have a portal, and it's all up there. So, you know, you can ask all your questions, and you'll find the information, and they're going to be very helpful to you. So now I have employee coverage. You really need to understand what it is you have and how much it's costing you. And a lot of people don't really understand. They don't really understand the max out of pocket and how much their coinsurance and when they pay coinsurance and just what. So you really need to understand that. And it's more and more important because companies are pushing more and more of the costs of health insurance to the employees. So just some obvious examples. If you don't have to pay any kind of contribution for your health insurance, the deductible is $250 and the max out of pocket is $1,000. Well, I think that's a slam dunk. You want to stay on the company plan. But I've had clients like this. Well, now their portion is $500. The deductible is $2,500. The max out-of-pocket is $10,000. Well, now I think you really want to start thinking about how much are you really getting. Yes, they're providing it to you, but how much are you really paying for something? The Medicare option could be more inclusive for you. But you have to understand it, and then you have to, do some research. Now, here's the problem. is, yes, there's an employee benefits department, but they're focused on the group health plan. They generally don't understand how Medicare fits with the group health plan. And as one of my other clients said to me, Esther, there is no way I'm going to go to the employee benefits department and tell them I'm thinking of Medicare for fear I'm going to be on the next RIF list. So you're going to have to be looking into this on the side, I'm afraid. But here's a guideline, and it depends on how big the company is that you're working for. It's against the law for an employer to discriminate against you or a spouse who are over 65 if there are 20 or more employees in your company, which is why when you pay your employee portion, the cost to you as a 64-year-old is the same as the cost to somebody as a 21-year-old. They can't discriminate against you. So, however, and in those instances, it is defined that the company plan, it's called primary. The company plan pays first. Company plan pays primary. If you work for a company that's less than 20 employees, Medicare is defined to be primary. So it will, knowing how many, and you should know how many people are in your company. The one thing that might surprise you, if you're a small company and you're part of a larger plan, you may think you're a small company, but you may actually be part of a larger pool. So what are some of the things to consider? As I mentioned, this cost, deductible, coinsurance, out-of-pocket. You know, you might have to also consider, is there, you need spousal coverage for a child? Are you a high user of medical in services? Did your company fund an HSA? You know, there's other things, you know, do high income, you know, there's other things that you have to think about. But that's the primary differences, is based on size of company. And then once you get to that, how much is this really costing you? How much are you getting for it? How much do you use it? So I have four navigational guidelines. There's only four ways that you can look at this. Okay. So you're turning 65. You're in an individual plan. Whether you got it on the exchange or through a broker, or you're in a grandfathered plan, you have to sign up for Medicare Part A and B because you're not in a group health plan. These are individual plans. That special enrollment is for group health plans, so you're not in a group plan. So you have to enroll for Medicare Parts A and B at age 65. Now, my guess is that you have an awfully high premium and you're going to be ecstatic about going into Medicare if you fit into this. So then what are you going to do? You're going to decide how you want to take it. Do you want to take it on this fee-for-service, I can go to any Medicare provider, or do you want to get into a managed care environment? And then you have to disenroll from your plan. They're not going to phone you up and they're not going to terminate you, so you have to remember to disenroll from that plan. So the next is retiree insurance. So as I mentioned, it's going to be part of your retiree plan that you have to sign up for Medicare A and B. Medicare would pay primary to anything your retiree plan might cover otherwise. And you'd really need to understand these requirements and your options. Then you need to sign up and make your elections. And in this case, you're automatically disenrolled from the company plan because you switched to the retiree plan. So you don't have to worry about disenrollment. So now you're working past 65 and you're in a company with less than 20 employees. Medicare is primary. So you're going to have to enroll in Medicare Part A and B. So then the question is, do you stay on the company plan? Generally, people don't, because you have two sets of premiums. And because Medicare pays primary, that other company premium isn't buying you a lot of coverage. But there might be extenuating circumstances, so you have to understand it. And it could be how your company structures it. They may say, because they can, that once you turn 65, we will cover your Medicare A and B or whatever. They can say that. So it may be part of their plan that they will pay your Medicare. I don't know what these company plans say, but by and large, you don't see somebody enrolled in Medicare and staying on a company plan that would be a full premium when over 65, when it's a small company. So assuming that you would go on to Medicare again, then do you want this to go to any Medicare provider, or you're going to take it as a managed care alternative? And then here also, you need to disenroll from the company plan. They're just going to keep your money. There's nothing that's triggered on their side. You need to trigger it. So then you're working past 65, and there the company plan pays primary. So you're going to review your coverage, and you're going to make your decisions. Are you going to sign up for the company plan? Are you going to sign up for Part A? Do you have creditable coverage? Or are you going to move to Medicare? Then if you do stay on the company plan for your special enrollment period before you retire, you're going to think 3 months before the date that you're going to retire, you want to start your Medicare enrollments, and you are going to have to get documentation from your employee benefits department. So if you were thinking you were going to retire and give your employer 2 weeks, you need to reconsider that, because you have to get documentation to enroll in Medicare to get that special enrollment period. That's it. So, fee-for-service, any Medicare provider, Parts A and B, taken as original Medicare, likely to take a Medigap private policy with that, and a standalone Part D drug plan. If you want a managed care alternative, that's Part C. All of that is combined in what now is termed a Medicare Advantage plan, probably with drugs, and that is your alternative. And that's it. You got the basics.
I'd like to mention that to remind our listening audience, this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Esther Koch speaking on what you need to know about Medicare before you're 65. I know there are questions. Will you take questions?
I'd be happy to.
All right. We'll pass the mic to those with their hands up. Okay.
Esther, thank you for covering a convoluted, scary topic.
But did you get some clarity? Please tell me you got some clarity.
I hope, but you may not think so with my questions. So if I have retiree HMO coverage.
I'm sorry, you have retiree HMO?
Right, Kaiser.
Pre-65?
Yeah, Kaiser.
Pre-65?
Yes.
Pre-65 retiree
so
coverage.
I understand when I turn 65 in a year and a half, Kaiser turns to a Medicare plan. So my first question was,
you trigger that.
Okay.
When you turn 65,
yeah.
You need to understand what your you also have. So there's pre-65 retiree coverage.
Yes.
And there's post-65 retiree coverage. You have pre-65. Do you also have post-65 retiree coverage?
Yes.
Okay.
However, the question I had was, can I expect my post-65 coverage or 65 going on coverage?
Right.
Can I expect that my deductibles that I'm paying now for whatever kind of visits I'm doing, whether they're back classes or meditation classes or chemical dependency groups or whatever,
no.
Can I expect all those
to be the
to
same?
To stay the same? You said no.
No.
Yeah,
that's
what I thought. Okay.
No. But
okay.
you... No.
Okay. So the second question I had was, they quoted that my Medicare will only cost me $85 a month. I have it through UCSF. So that $85, is that for A and B? No, is that for B only or for B, C, and D?
So who's they?
Kaiser.
No.
UCSF.
Who they told you the $85?
UCSF.
UCSF, or was it your prior employer?
My prior employer was UCSF.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excuse me.
They're
okay.
The ones that pay for
so,
my
So my guess is, in that situation, as part of your retiree, post-65 retiree plan, your prior employer has chosen to contribute towards the cost of your Medicare Part A and B. So they're reducing that price to you, is my guess. I'm not looking at any detail, but that is my guess. And some retiree plans, post-65, they might cover some of that premium.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
In the interest of time, if you have a personal question that has to do with your personal situation, maybe Esther would talk to you after the program. That way we can cover more general questions.
Thank you. What do retirees do? They travel months at a time. So what, they don't cover at all Medicare, or do we pay first and they reimburse us?
Medicare does not cover the expenses when you're outside of the country. So if you, it happens that Medigap, that Plan F, does have some foreign insurance coverage. I think it's I think it's $50,000 to $250,000 over the life of the policy, and then there's a deductible, I think, of up $250. But the other thing is you probably want to get a travel insurance policy.
I have two questions. The first question, I'm not really expecting you to answer, which is, why don't we have single payer in this country?
Well, wait a minute. Medicare is single payer.
That's true. That's
just
right.
Just so you know, Medicare is single payer.
Not all the rest of it. The more specific question is, what's the path for spouses, if the spouse is not yet 65? Are these basically all individual policies? Or when you're looking at a spouse, they're just kind of on their own? How's that work?
Well, yes and no. So one aspect with a spouse is that if the spouse hasn't worked, the spouse and because of the spouse earns credit for Social Security and Part A free based on being the spouse of someone who's in it. So actually, a spouse who hasn't worked or didn't have enough work for their own Social Security record would enroll in Medicare under the working spouse's Social Security number. So that's one question. Then the other question being, if these are individual, so you're right. If somebody turns 65 ahead of time, and maybe they're the one that has the company plan, and so the younger spouse is covered under the company plan, and then they choose to go off of the company plan or really need to go off of the company plan, then you do have an issue for that the spouse, but you do have at least currently, and as at least at this point proposed, that you would have automatic acceptance into an Affordable Care Act plan. But usually when if the spouse who has the employment is the older spouse and goes on to Medicare, then that younger spouse would, because there usually isn't company insurance for a trailing spouse when there's no employment. So that's when, and that actually is one of the things that the Affordable Care Act did address for those exact situations, that then there was an avenue for people close to Medicare age but not yet there to get insurance.
Thank you. I have two questions. One is about the high income premiums. Is there a cap on that of any sort? And does that formula change each year as your income goes down? You said it's based on 2 years prior to your signing up. And then the other thing is, does the donut hole on medicine still exist? And if so, can you explain that?
Let me address the donut hole first, because there's an easy explanation to it. You can't focus on the donut hole. You really have to focus on what your total cost of your premiums plus your drugs are. Because implicit in that is whether you're in the donut hole or out of the donut hole. But so that's my answer to the second question. The first question, in the Affordable Care Act, that I believe the tiers are through 2019, I believe. The tiers are, so at some point those tiers might be changed. But right now they start at 85 for an individual, 170. So in terms of a max, that last comment on the screen was
the additional premium amount.
It's an amount, a change annually, but if you're in the highest tier, regardless of how high you are, it's still that amount for that tier. And just to let you know, it's based on modified adjusted gross income. And being a former tax accountant, I can tell you that's the last number on your front page, which is adjusted gross income, adding 8B, which is non-taxable interest.
Yeah. Two questions with regard to the fee-for-service route. First of which, for those of us who are still working and want to sign up for Medicare, I understand the special enrollment period for Part B, but what about the drug plan? Do you have to sign up at that window at the end of the year, or can you sign up for the drug plan when you sign up for Part B?
It's based on creditable coverage. So if you are working and your company has creditable coverage, then you're allowed to sign up for a drug plan because you're going from creditable coverage to creditable coverage. So you don't have to wait till the end of the year. The problem would be is if you don't, your company plan doesn't have creditable coverage, then you cannot wait. Then you can't enroll then. You'd have to wait till the end of the year, or conversely, you would do it the prior year at the end of the year.
Second question with regard to Medigap. I looked at the table of local providers for Medigap insurance this afternoon, and I noticed that there's quite a menu there. Do these providers differ in the, let's call it the quality of their payment, like whether they're actually going to follow through and pay? Because my experience with insurance providers is that they're not all equal. I've had some that were better at paying for certain events and others that were less good.
I think that's probably true. There's probably differences with between vendors.
So we have to be careful with the vendors, too.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Right.
Hi. Yeah. A question about switching between alternative one and alternative two. You'd indicated that it's hard to go from two to one because there's no guaranteed access to Medigap. Is that correct? And that's irrespective of open enrollment or whatever, that once you're in alternative two, there's no guarantee you can pick from an appropriate Medigap policy to go back to one. Is that correct?
I would say that the likelihood, if you do this after 12 months that you've been in a Medigap plan, is that you will not be able to get into a Medigap plan because you're subject to underwriting and you probably wouldn't make it through underwriting.
Pre-existing conditions, in other words.
Correct.
Is that right?
Right.
Got it. Okay.
The likelihood.
Got it. What about going the other way? If you start out in number one and you have Medigap and everything, and then you decide you want to try the alternative?
Well, you know, actually, there is actually a possibility on that. If it's the second one. If you started in fee-for-service Medicare and you had a Medigap plan, you dropped that plan, and then you enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan for the first time, stayed less than a year, and then you switched back.
Okay.
So, you know, and as I said, you know, here's another way you can get into it. You move out of the plan service area. The Medicare Advantage coverage was ended by the provider, or the plan or insurance company committed fraud. That's why I'm saying that the likelihood is not so high.
Thank you for the clarification. I'm following on the question that was over on the other side of the room. And that was, ran through an example, if the working spouse was 65, the younger spouse was the non-working. The question is, what if it's just the opposite? And the working spouse is the younger, and the older spouse is non-working. What do you do for Medigap? I'm specifically talking about Medigap.
Well, if it's the working spouse that's younger, and the working spouse is younger, the non-working spouse is older, assuming that non-working spouse is on the company plan and its current employment. Oh, non-working spouse.
Of
working
spouse on a small group plan.
Of your working husband? Correct. Well, then you are part, you would not have to sign up unless you're a real small company. We're not going greater than 20 versus under 20, or we're under 20. So say it to me again. Maybe we can do that. That one's a little more. Yeah, if I can do that after. Yeah.
Hi. I'm a retired employee of San Francisco Unified School District, and I have...
So was my mother, so thank you. Thank you to the teachers in the room.
And I have lifetime medical benefits that I don't pay for medical benefits now except for dental. And under this plan, I'm going to be paying more. So I'm
under
really
what under what
Medicare.
Plan?
Under Medicare, I'm going to have to pay for a premium. So I really am confused as to why I can't stay where I am and not pay for my medical. And because I'm turning 65, I'm forced to pay more for my medical care.
You know, this is a really good example of compared to what. So if you're in a company plan, or here's a retiree plan, and you didn't have to pay anything, now all of a sudden you look at Medicare and you think $300 a month, oh my, why? But if you've been in an ACA, if you've been in an individual plan and you're now paying $1,000 a month, you say, woohoo. So, there's a lot of people in the rural who would be saying Yahoo. You have to, that those would be the terms of a retiree plan. They're all going to require that you sign up for Medicare A and B. And if with this respect to this other gentleman, it sounded like his company was paying something towards those premiums. It sounds from what you're saying is your company is not paying towards those particular premiums, but they're giving you other stuff.
Yes, and they inform me that I have to pay. So thanks.
Again, that's not looking at any details, but that's kind of how I would look at that.
Thank you, Esther, for the presentation. Just hold it. Question on continuing employment after 65 and coverage under a credible employer plan. What are the sort of the enrollment, key enrollment dates, particularly on Medicap? If you don't, I understand you enroll in Medicare at 65.
Unless you're in a company plan, then you can you have a special enrollment period.
Even for Medicare at 65, you
correct.
Can still
if you're
enroll
in a company
later.
Group plan. If you're a current employee in a group plan, then you have a special enrollment period.
Okay. So at what point during that special enrollment period, let's say 67 or 68 years old, and I want to go on Medicare, can I still enroll in the Medicap?
So you're working now.
Yes.
So it's when you stop working and are no longer a current employee covered under a group plan, that is when you need to enroll in Medicare, because that's when your special enrollment period.
3 months prior.
Well, you want to do it 3 months prior to. It's not like you. It's you because you have to do all these enrollments. That's why I say 3 months. Thank you for catching me on that. Yes, start 3 months prior to that. Retirement. There's somebody in the back.
Hello. Thanks very much, Esther. I wanted to ask, what happens if someone
forgets or skips making payments. This happened to a friend. She's very elderly, and she forgot to make payments.
They probably disenrolled her. She probably needs to look to family who can assist her. Just as for all of us, at a point in time when we can't do, we need to be thinking about who is there going to be family, or who is going to be doing those things for us. But non-payment of premiums is a reason that you would be kicked off, and there would have been numerous notifications from Medicare that would have been sent to her. She could appeal it, but I don't know. It was her responsibility, and she would have been adequately notified.
Question, Esther, I do have a number of questions, but what I wanted to ask you is,
I'm sorry,
what,
I don't see who's speaking. Oh, sorry.
What should you do if you're on Medicare and retired for dental care? What are the best options?
I know that AARP has a dental program, but I don't know of any others. I'm just not knowledgeable in that area. Right. Is what I'm saying.
Is there a country that does medical care or health care really well? Who is that country?
Google medical tourism.
If you have a Medigap policy and a Plan F, and let's say you have a particular health plan, United Healthcare or something. So did I understand correctly that you will not be able to subsequently change that because you may have developed underlying condition, a prevailing condition? Is that correct?
What I was referring to is if you were changing from a Medicare Advantage plan into it. If you already have an F plan, usually you could probably go into a lower level plan without underwriting. Usually you can go down without underwriting. You just can't go up without underwriting. So if you want to stay in an F plan, you don't have to worry about anything.
Esther, our formal time is gone, but will you stay and answer questions? Mm-hmm. All right. And I want to give our thanks to Esther Koch, who's speaking on what you need to know about Medicare before you're 65. We also thank our audience here, as well as those listening to the recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 114th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.